Let's go ahead and open our Bibles once again to the book of Numbers, chapter 22. We're going to begin in verse 15. We are in the 40th year of the Exodus. We are only a matter of months, even weeks, we can say, until the 40 years is over. And Israel will cross the Jordan River and go into their promised land and begin a long history of life there. But right now, we're having to deal with Moab, the neighbor on the eastern side of the Dead Sea, that is very worried about the Israelis who are encamped on the eastern side of the Jordan, across from Jericho, which is on the western side of the Jordan, because they have completely wiped out two armies within the last few weeks that the Moabites had been afraid of, had even been conquered by. Some of their territory had been taken away by Sihon, their neighbor to the north. But the Israelis just steamrolled over those two groups, Sihon and Og. And so Moab would like to secure their territory and maybe put a stop to Israel becoming the very present danger to the region. But they don't have the military ability to take them on. So the king of Moab, Balak, figures that if he can break the spiritual back of Israel, that maybe he could then conquer them in the physical world. So he gets a group together from both Moab and Midian, which is Moab's neighbor down to the southeast, and they send this entourage up to the Euphrates River to a region where there's a famous prophet by the name of Balaam. Now, Balaam, strangely enough, serves the true and living God, as we saw yesterday in the conversations. And the plan is for Balaam to come down and put a curse on the Israelis, and this would allow them to be attacked successfully. But Balaam checks in with God, and God says, no, you may not go and curse those people. They are blessed by me. And so Balaam says, gentlemen, can't go with you. Have a nice trip. And they leave. And it would have been great if the story ended there, but it doesn't. Because as I said, as we were closing up yesterday, for people who believe that money is the answer to anything, when they are told no, they simply think that the problem is, I haven't offered enough money. And so they offer more. And so, chapter 22 of Numbers, verse 15, once again, Balak sent princes, more in number and more honorable than these. They came to Balaam and said to him, thus says Balak, the son of Zippor, let nothing hinder you from coming to me. For I will surely do you great honor, and whatever you say to me, I will do. Come curse this people for me. But Balaam answered and said to the servants of Balak, though Balak were to give me his house full of silver and gold, I could not go beyond the command of he who is my God to do less or more. So you too, please stay here tonight that I may know what more he who is will say to me. Now this is where the problem begins. Balaam has already been told, no, do not go. These people are blessed by me. I don't want them cursed. So when these guys make a return appearance and tell Balaam, we'll give you whatever you want, Balaam should have responded, I told you already, God says no. Don't ask again. Go away. But he doesn't. He does say, I can't do anything except what God tells me to do. That's good. But then he tells them, why don't you hang out here and let me check in with God to see whether or not I can do something for you. So he's already being enticed by the wealth that is being offered here, that he'd really, really, really like to do something to earn that money. And the New Testament agrees with that characterization, that it is greed that starts motivating this, apparently up to this point, very successful and godly man. And that's a dangerous lesson to be learned here. Verse 20, God came to Balaam at night and said to him, "If the men have come to call you, rise, go with them, but only do what I tell you." So God does give him permission. And of course, God is functioning here from his knowledge of all things, past, present, and future. He knows what's going to happen here. He already knows the heart of Balaam. He knows that Balaam is going to defect and go to the dark side, as we'd say. And so God has decided, I will use him to accomplish my purposes. So he says, all right, you may go with them. But I'm telling you right now, Balaam, you can only say what I tell you to say. And so, verse 21, Balaam rose in the morning and saddled his donkey and went with the princes of Moab. But God's anger was kindled because he went. Now, don't get confused by the English phrasing here. God is not angry because Balaam is making the trip, because he just gave him permission to make the trip. God is angry because as he's making this trip, Balaam's heart is becoming more and more twisted by the greed. And he is planning on doing whatever it is that Balak wants him to do in order to get the cash, in order to get the silver and gold and whatever else. And so God needs to rein him in, to keep him from going too far before God uses him to actually put a blessing on the Israeli people. Because, sorry, spoiler alert, Balaam will bless the people rather than curse them, even though he's being hired to curse them. So God's anger was kindled because he went, and the angel of He Who Is stood in his way as his adversary. Now he was riding on the donkey, and his two servants were with him. So God sends an invisible angel, invisible to all the people that are making this trip here. And Balaam is riding on his donkey. He's got two of his servants apparently either riding donkeys themselves or they're walking alongside. And Balaam doesn't see a thing, but the donkey does, which I find interesting. My wife and I have conversed many a time that we suspect that that animals might be able to see angels that we can't, and that sometimes when they react in a strange fashion, that maybe that's what they're seeing. Now, you may not think that, but hey, that's what my wife and I talk back and forth about, and a lot of that is based on this passage right here. So verse 23, the donkey saw the angel of He Who Is standing in the road with a drawn sword in his hand. So the donkey is not stupid. The donkey sees this angel, which is much more scary looking than a person, and it has some sort of shiny implement, maybe even a fiery sword in his hand, and that's enough to make the donkey go, I don't want to go near that. So the donkey turned aside out of the road and went into the field. So she veers around this angel, and Balaam is just like, what's going on here? My donkey is being stupid. So Balaam struck the donkey and turned her onto the road. So he starts whipping at her to get her back onto the hard-packed road. Well, a little time passes, a little distance passes. Verse 24. Then the angel of He Who Is stood in a narrow path between the vineyards with a wall on either side. And when the donkey saw the angel of He Who Is, she pushed against the wall and pressed Balaam's foot against the wall, so he struck her again. So this time, there's not open field, it's vineyards, and it's got walls on each side to kind of keep certain types of animals out. And the donkey, again, does not want to go too close to this scary-looking individual that she can see. So she goes as far off the road as she can, and she ends up squashing Balaam's foot and leg against the wall. And it's a rock wall, which means it's going to be kind of rough and probably got some sharp points on it. And so he gets scraped, and he's mad. And so he starts wailing on her. Verse 26. Then the angel of He Who Is went ahead and stood in a narrow place where there was no way to turn either to the right or to the left. So now we're at a spot that, for whatever reason, the path is like one donkey wide. That's as wide as it is. And so when the donkey saw the angel of He Who Is this time, she simply lay down under Balaam. So in her little donkey brain, she goes, well, I'm not moving toward that thing, that personage. I'm going to lay down here and wait. Maybe he'll move. And Balaam's anger was kindled, and he struck the donkey with his staff. Now, up to this point, he might have been using the little donkey whip, which is just a little bit of a tap and swat is all that it takes. But this time, he gets his stick, his walking stick, and he starts wailing on her big time, hurting her horribly. And that's when God intervenes. So He Who Is opened the mouth of the donkey, and she said to Balaam. Now, there's a lot of people that want to argue back and forth about just how smart a donkey is and whether or not this is what the donkey was really thinking, or whether or not God is just using the donkey like a little ventriloquist puppet. I'll give you my opinion. I think this is the donkey expressing its own memory in very basic language. That's my opinion. I think most of our animals that we interact with as pets and work animals are smarter than sometimes people want to give credit for them. And I do believe they have memories. And so this donkey is given permission by God and ability by God to use human speech for once in its life. And so she says, what have I done to you that you've struck me these three times? And Balaam said to the donkey, no, and he's so mad, he's not all that shocked that the donkey's talking to him. Because you made a fool of me. I wished I had a sword in my hand that I would kill you. So he is so mad that he would want to kill his special animal because of what she's done. The donkey said to Balaam, am I not your donkey on which you've ridden all your life long to this very day? Is it my habit to treat you this way? So she says, you've known me for years. You've ridden on me for years. You've fed me and curried me and taken care of me, and I've taken care of you for all this time. Have you ever, ever seen me treat you this way? And he said, no. And then He Who Is opened the eyes of Balaam, and he saw the angel of He Who Is standing in the way with his drawn sword in his hand. So all of this that God has been doing has been leading up to this moment for Balaam to realize that his heart had shifted against God. There is a proverb that talks about a righteous man looks out for the lives of his animals. Now, in that context of that day, it was particularly talking about work animals and agricultural animals, and how if you're a righteous person, you want to take good care of them. But honestly, I think it goes even to our modern time, that the way people treat animals who are much more weak and vulnerable than we are as people, it shows some indication of where your heart's at. They have to depend upon us to take care of them. And so when you see somebody that mistreats animals, there's something fundamentally wrong with that person's heart. And here is Balaam, who evidently had served God for very many years, had represented God faithfully up to this point. But now, in a matter of weeks, his heart has been shifted by greed into the point where he would actually murder an animal that was innocent because it was getting in his way for getting what he wanted. And that's not good. And so Balaam needed to have this special intervention for him to see his own heart and how dark it's become at this point. And so he just now said, if I had a sword, I'd kill you. And then God opens his eyes and he realizes there is an angel standing a few feet away in front of his donkey's nose that has a drawn sword. And so he bowed down and fell on his face. The angel of he who has said to him, why have you struck your donkey these three times? Behold, I have come out to oppose you because your way is perverse before me. Now, remember, angels are messengers, and when they speak on God's behalf, they often speak God's words in the first person. Some people think that this is a Christophany. This is God, Jesus, making a presentation in the Old Testament. I don't happen to hold to that. I just believe that this is God speaking through this angel, telling Balaam, you are way off track, bud. You have twisted your heart to the dark side. Verse 33, the donkey saw me and turned aside before me these three times. So your donkey is smarter than you are. If she had not turned aside from me, surely just now I would have killed you and let her live. So effectively, your donkey just saved your life. This man, according to the testimony of the angel, came within a matter of feet from being executed for his hard-heartedness. His donkey saved his life. So, we have a moment of clarity. We have a moment of repentance. Unfortunately, it's not going to last for long, but at least it's here. Verse 34, Balaam said to the angel of he who is, I have sinned, for I did not know that you stood in the road against me. Now, therefore, if it is evil in your sight, I will turn back. And the angel of he who is said to Balaam, you go with the men, but you speak only the word that I tell you. So a repeat of what he was told when he was given permission to go on the road. You may go, but once you arrive there, you speak only the exact words that I tell you. Nothing more, nothing less. So Balaam went with the princes of Balak. When Balak heard that Balaam had come, he went out to meet him at the city of Moab on the border formed by the Arnon at the extremity of the border. And Balak said to Balaam, Did I not send to you to call you? Why did you not come to me? Am I not able to honor you? So the king is basically irritated because he didn't get down here sooner. Because he's very anxious. He wants this stuff taken care of. So Balaam said to Balak, "Behold, I've come to you. Have I now any power of my own to speak anything? The word that God puts in my mouth, that must I speak." So fair warning, I can only say what God tells me to. Balaam went with Balak, and they came to Kiriath Hazot. So this is going to be a city where they can have their initial meeting and get ready for what happens next. So verse 40, Balak sacrificed oxen and sheep and sent for Balaam and for the princes who were with him. Now, who is Balak worshiping? He's worshiping Chemosh. Chemosh Molech, the destroyer king. This is the twisted version of the true and living God who destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Moab and Ammon both came from the after effects of that. There was a situation of incest with Lot and his two daughters. And so they believe that they worship a God that destroys places with fire. And the way that you appease him is you get drunk and you have sex, you impregnate women, and then you offer as sacrifices the babies from the last time you did this service. So it's a very, very, very twisted and horrendous faith that Balak has. And so his goal is for this version of Chemosh Molech, the destroyer king, to be able to curse the Israelis in the spirit world so that he can then mop up whatever remains of them if the destroyer king God will burn them up or something like that. So that's what he's got in mind, and he sees Balaam as the connection to the supernatural world where he can get this triggered. So verse 41, in the morning, Balak took Balaam and brought him up to Bamat Baal, and from there he saw a fraction of the people. So Bamat Baal is kind of the high place of the Lord. The word Baal is, it's a Canaanite word that means Lord or master. So this is apparently some sort of worship site that the Moabites already had, and it overlooks the Jordan Valley. And from this angle, you can see kind of a section of the Israeli encampment that's spread out. And the goal is to curse them. And we're almost out of time for the day, so we'll only see a little bit of the buildup here, and then we'll have to come back to it on Monday. Chapter 23, Balaam said to Balak, "Build for me here 7 altars and prepare for me 7 bulls and 7 rams." 7 is the number of completion. Balak did as Balaam had said, and Balak and Balaam offered on each altar a bull and a ram. And Balaam said to Balak, "You stand beside your burnt offering, and I will go. Perhaps he who is will come to meet me, and whatever he shows me, I will tell you." And so he went to the bare height, and God met Balaam. And Balaam said to him, "I've arranged the 7 altars. I've offered on each of them a bull and a ram. And he who is put a word in Balaam's mouth and said, 'Return to Balak, and thus you shall speak.'" So Balak is expecting cursing words. But God is going to now use this famous prophet to speak blessing words over the Israeli people. And these blessings include a very, very significant passage that is tied into the Christmas story. And so as we work our way through here, I want you to kind of anticipate seeing Jesus in the midst of some of these words. Have a great weekend and a great Lord's Day. I'll see you Monday, Lord willing.